good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it'll be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Mr. Jack Thompson. He's written a fascinating book called Out of Harm's Way. And, you know, we have a real problem in America today. We have, certainly within our movies and with our television and on our radio, obscenity, all sorts of things that are aimed at undermining the very values of our Christian civilization. And over the last 50 years, we've seen a very definite transformation of what is really in the public arena. And, of course, we've seen increasing coarseness and a necessary vulgarity on radio and certainly on television. Well, most of us sort of see that, and there's not too much we can do about it. But there's a great deal that you can do, and certainly that's what Mr. Thompson set out some years ago. So I'm going to let Jack tell you how this all started. Jack is a lawyer. He's been practicing law for many years, and he decided some years ago, back in the 1980s, he was going to get involved. And I'm going to let him tell you the story of how he got involved, and then, of course, what he has been able to do in the past and what he's doing today. Mr. Jack Thompson, thank you so much for being with us. Mr. Thompson, are you there? Well, let's see. I wonder why we can't hear Mr. Thompson. Everything should be set up, and so I'm going to ask our producer if he'll go ahead and perhaps get our engineer out. Could you check and see if Mr. Thompson's on the line? And he may be talking to me, and for some reason or other, I can't hear him.
Can you hear me?
Yes, there we are. Okay. I was getting a little worried. We had a problem earlier today. I was getting a little paranoid. All right, fine. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
All right, fine. What? Now, this is an entirely different audience than when we talked to this afternoon, fortunately. So you can tell the same story again, and they'll think it's the first time. And I always look forward to hearing it anyway.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. In 1987, I was, I'd say, a libertarian who thought that there was nothing that one could or should do about certain shock radio content or obscenity or other material that even then was fairly common in America. But then I heard a talk show host on a local shock radio station in Miami soliciting teenage boys for sex on the public airwaves. And as a pastor of mine often has said, thirst presupposes there's water somewhere, and in the twinkling of an eye, I knew that that was wrong and also that there must be a remedy for that. And in fact, I went to the law library here at the University of Miami and basically had to unlearn what I was taught in law school, and found that, in fact, there are laws on the books, and they're still on the books, that make it a crime, according to laws passed by Congress, to air indecent material. And so, to make a long story short, I proceeded against this station and secured, by God's grace, the first decency fines ever levied by the FCC in the nation's history. Subsequent to that, 2 years later, I was involved in what's known as the Two Live Crew controversy and was friend of the court in a federal proceeding that rendered the first verdict in history that a sound recording, in that instance, the Two Live Crew's album As Nasty As They Want to Be, was obscene under
Just hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Dr. Stan, I guess Jack Thompson, he's saying he actually went to court and actually was able to get an obscene ruling, a court ruling, that the material that was put out by Two Live Crew was obscene. And so what actually happened? Were they fined for that?
No, they weren't. They weren't fined. In fact, what had occurred was I was getting various rulings around the state from courts that the album was probably obscene, and various police departments were suggesting to record dealers that they then shouldn't carry the album. And the ACLU filed a what's called a declaratory judgment action to get the album declared not obscene in order to end the debate. And in fact, they were thrilled with the court that judge that was chosen, who was a Jimmy Carter appointee and a liberal judge and a civil libertarian and so forth, and he listened to the album. And he was stunned that this album was being sold to children around the world, and it was clearly obscene, and he ruled it obscene. So basically, the ACLU couldn't imagine that a court anywhere would find this obscene, and so they were the ones that filed the lawsuit. And so what was useful in that was that I think it alerted the American people that on Main Street America, obscene material was being sold to children in record stores across the country.
And of course, and not only that, it was being actually sold, but actually that there was something that could be done about it. Wasn't that something?
Yeah, exactly. I think who is it, Edmund Burke said that all that's necessary is for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I think the obverse of that is that you can defeat evil if you do something. And that was a gratifying result. And subsequent to that, I was called out of the clear blue sky by Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and he had been following the Two Live Crew controversy and thought that that was a good success. And he then asked me to represent his Freedom Alliance, for which he's still the honorary chairman, to take on rapper Ice-T's Cop Killer. And this was a song on rapper Ice-T's Body Count album. Ice-T, by the way, is now portrays a cop on the Law & Order show, Special
right.
Victims Unit on NBC, ironically. And so I got to speak right after Charlton Heston at that Time Warner shareholders meeting, when the issue of the day, in the midst of a police boycott of Time Warner and all of this controversy about this album. And what I got to witness firsthand, which is recounted in the book.
Hold that thought, and we'll be right back in just a moment with all of our stations here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jack Thompson. We're talking about his fascinating book, Out of Harm's Way. And he's telling this story. He was actually contacted by Colonel Oliver North and asked if he would represent Oliver North's organization in a lawsuit against a fellow named Ice-T, who had written a song about Cop Killer, and they felt it was obscene. And so actually, of course, there were tremendous concern about this from the police force, and Charlton Heston had appeared before the stockholders meeting of Time Warner, and then Mr. Thompson had an opportunity to speak, pointing out to Time Warner how dangerous this was, really how wrong this was, to be popularizing among our youth this idea of killing police officers. So pick up the story there, please, Jack.
Sure, and we didn't sue anybody. We were just trying to persuade them to do the right thing. Colin Powell, in his biography, My American Journey, has pointed out that America has lost its sense of shame. And I think that's an excellent and useful observation, and this is what was going on with the Ice-T's Cop Killer. But despite all the promises to the arts community and to the music community that they would never pull this song and never back down, within 2 weeks they did, and they pulled it off store shelves around the world. And I think a blow was struck for the notion that you at least shouldn't and can't get away with targeting police for death on a rap album.
And so Time Warner actually pulled the album and took that song out, which, of course, they should have done. They never should have put it in the first place.
Sure. But we held their feet to the fire. And what my argument was, which is my argument in all of these fights, is that it's not for us to impose our personal tastes upon the marketplace, but if a law is being violated, or if there's actually danger that's a clear and imminent and present danger, then indeed you can make a lawyerly argument and a common sense argument that that must stop. And that's what I did then. That's what I did in the Two Live Crew thing. That's what I did in the FCC matter. And that's what I've done more recently in the controversy over Howard Stern. I've been privileged to be part of the FCC regulatory process, secured $500,000 in fines against Clear Channel for Stern's indecent broadcast. And Stern, on the cover of my book, is quoted as saying, quote, "This lunatic lawyer in Miami got me off the air." Well, I like to point out, if I'm a lunatic and I was up against his lawyers, what does that say about them?
And, of course, the thing is that Howard Stern, I don't know how many of our listeners know, but he was just totally obscene. He was doing everything he could to be simply insult and degrade women and our society, and there was just no reason for it at all. I mean, this whole idea of shock jock, it was just it was an effort just to undermine everything that's good and noble and worthwhile in the air. In our country, he was doing it on purpose, knowing full well the impact that this sort of talk would have. And eventually, how did you get rid of Howard Stern? Was it simply the threat of more fines for Clear Channel and the other networks that carried him?
What happened was 1 month after the Super Bowl halftime show, the so-called wardrobe malfunction, which was fully planned and orchestrated, Stern aired on his program a racist comment, which was in the context of a sexual setting, and you know, liberals can tolerate misogyny, but they don't really tolerate racism very well. And when you put those two together, it's like putting a match to gasoline. And so I got the transcript of that to Clear Channel. Within, I believe, an hour and a half, he was put on probation, taken off Clear Channel stations, at least temporarily, and then the FCC processed a complaint I had filed and levied a $500,000 fine against the Stern Show on Clear Channel, and at that point, Clear Channel took him off the air completely. They declared a zero-tolerance policy across the board for all their stations for indecency, and then months later, in November of 2004, the FCC and Viacom Infinity, which syndicated Stern's show, entered into a $3.5 million consent decree, and one of my complaints was part of that. And they acknowledged that, indeed, certain broadcasts of the Stern show had been indecent, and they promised to shut down the high level of indecency Stern had been broadcasting. And that Stern said, "That's enough for me. I can't do my show anymore," and he fled to satellite radio.
Isn't that too bad?
Yeah, what a shame. What a loss to the arts community.
Well, all I can say is I'm so glad that you did what you did. And so I really want to talk then about really the next project that you've undertaken. And I think it's so important for our listeners to know that the military has a real problem with military recruits. How do you get them to kill people? How do you break down the inhibitions that most young people have? And as far as the sanctity of life, how do you get them to be willing to very casually pull the trigger, knowing full well that somebody is going to be hit and wounded and bleed and die as a result of it? And so they use video games. Now, they have had real problems during the First World War and the Second World War getting Americans to kill people. And it's just against their nature. So I'm going to let you pick up the story there and explain what these video games are and how they use the very video games that the military had actually bought and paid for to condition our young people on how to kill and how to kill police officers.
Sure. One of the great minds on this issue is a man by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He's a retired Army Ranger. He's a professor of psychology at West Point, and he wrote a book nominated for the Pulitzer Prize called On Killing, and it took a look at how in the world do you get people to kill. And after World War One, the Army found that if they went to a silhouette target as opposed to a bullseye, they could then get in the battlefield soldiers to be more likely to pull the trigger and shoot another human being, because they had been trained to shoot at a human figure. And to fast forward to now, the military has found that the very best way to suppress the inhibition to kill and to get soldiers to kill is to use virtual reality or interactive video games that are simulators, so that the mind, if it's willing to pull the trigger in a virtual reality and with the sense that no one really dies and there's no real consequence to killing, then you get in a combat setting, the brain thinks it's in a video game where there is no real killing, and you get the trigger to be pulled. And indeed, literally, the DOD is paying the video game industry to make these simulators for them, and then in some instances, the industries, the companies are turning around and literally selling these same games, these trainers, as civilian games to teenagers, which is outrageous, primarily because if it suppresses the inhibition to kill for a teenage recruit, of course it has that same effect on teenage civilians. And in fact, we're finding instances across the country in which school massacres, such as the one at Red Lake, certainly the one at Columbine, the one I get involved in this in Paducah, which the perpetrators, according to the FBI and the Secret Service, are almost uniformly involved in terribly violent entertainment, most notably video games, that have trained them to kill, literally.
And that was certainly true in Columbine, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. In fact, one of the stories recounted in the book is we filed a lawsuit in Paducah in early April 1999 on behalf of three families whose daughters were shot and killed by 14-year-old Michael Carneal, who trained on the game Doom. We went on the Today Show the next day. Matt Lauer asked me, what do you fear based upon what you know about these events? And I said, what we fear is other boys in other American high schools will train on the same game, Doom, and do the same thing or worse. 8 days later, Columbine happened, and we knew within 48 hours that Klebold and Harris had in fact trained on the same game, Doom. They had named their shotgun after a character in the game. They said they wanted to replicate the game Doom in the hallways of Columbine and so forth. And now more recently, with all of these other school shootings in between, we've got the Red Lake, Minnesota shooting in which Jeffrey Weiss, a Native American, trained on the Grand Theft Auto Vice City game, shot everyone in the head, took out the security officer first, which is the main strategy in the game. And we're seeing numerous incidents, including the one I was on 60 Minutes about this last year, in which teens are training on the Grand Theft Auto games to kill police officers. So we've gone from a rap song about cop killing to virtual reality simulators that train you how to kill cops.
And I think this Grand Theft Auto, and you were mentioning that there is a sequence in there when what you do is you get into the police station and then you steal a gun from one of the police officers and then you start shooting them in the head because they may very well be, having a bulletproof vest on. And this was all laid out in this Grand Theft Auto, wasn't it?
It was, and that was one of the more chilling aspects of the 60 Minutes piece we were on. We have a wrongful death case in Alabama on behalf of the police officers' families, who are not saying that the perpetrator isn't responsible for what he did. What they're saying is the video game company, in selling this cop-killing simulator to a teenage boy, trained him to kill and gave him certain killing techniques and, in fact, did, in effect, armed him and equipped him to kill. And we, in fact, have sworn affidavits now by experts who've testified before Congress on this phenomenon, who say that but for the play of the game, these men would not have been killed. And I'm pleased to announce that we just recently persuaded the judge to allow the case to go forward. All the motions to dismiss by the entertainment industry, including Walmart that sold the game to him and others, is going to go to trial. And so this is the first time in history that a copycat wrongful death action based upon the copycatting of violent entertainment has been allowed to proceed, and we're excited about it because we think it's an opportunity to make America safer and to at least send the message to the video game industry that they must stop marketing and selling adult-rated games to kids.
And I think what's important is that children process information differently than adults. Isn't that true?
Well, that's the scientific basis for the lawsuit, and in fact, it's really irrefutable. And here's what they're finding at Harvard, Indiana University, that MRI studies show that kids process them in the midbrain where copycatting occurs, whereas adults process them in the forebrain.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, the point that Jack Thompson is making is that children actually process information differently than adults do. And because of that, if you take a child and you give them information, you know, about learning how to kill, and you program them how to kill with a video game, why, they're not going to be able to separate, imagination from reality. Whereas the average adult processes information entirely differently, don't they?
Well, they do, and it's gratifying. One of the things that encourages us in our lawsuit in Alabama, which, by the way, was reported on favorably by Reader's Digest, which is a most subscribed-to magazine in the world and rather conservative editorial attitude, but they believe that we're onto something here. The brain scan studies, which are critical in this assessment, show that a kid's brain will light up in the midbrain like a Christmas tree. And in the midbrain, when they're playing video games, in the midbrain is the amygdala, which is the seat of emotions of the brain. It's basically the green light of the brain, which gives you a fight or flight response, whereas as the brain matures until the age of 25, when the brain stops growing, you get the forebrain, the frontal lobes, more and more involved in decision-making, and so that if the midbrain says, swing this fist or point this gun, or drive a car in a reckless fashion, the forebrain says, whoa, wait a minute, I'm going to be the red light here, and I'm going to say, if we do that, then there'll be some unfortunate consequences. In a child, in a teen, in an adolescent, that forebrain is literally not wired into the midbrain, and that's why in the Roper v. Simmons case decided in 2005 by the U.S. Supreme Court, one of the bases for knocking down the juvenile death penalty are the brain scan studies, Justice Kennedy pointed out in writing the majority opinion, that show that teens act impulsively and without thinking of the consequences. And that's why these games are so dangerous, because they basically, without frontal lobe involvement, train you to be a killer.
And, of course, the whole contention is that the store should not be selling
exactly
violent material such as this sort that is used to train people to kill. It should not be sending it to selling this to, what, children less than 18 or 16 or what?
Well, I think the reasonable line that ought to be drawn, but there are no laws that are on the books in this country, would be 18. That's the age of majority. But in the U.K., Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Canada, you cannot sell these very violent games that are mature rated to anyone under 18 because laws have been passed and they recognize that it's harmful. In this country, the land of the free, we've confused freedom with licentiousness, and that freedom and liberty must not be informed by morality or common sense. And so in this country, the recent video game report card given by Joe Lieberman on December showed that kids as young as 9 years of age can walk into Best Buy, Walmart, Target, Circuit City, a GameStop, and buy any game, no matter how violent, no questions asked, and that's simply unacceptable.
And, of course, the thing is that the states have the right under our Constitution to pass legislation. The states should start really passing that legislation, shouldn't they?
Well, they should, and they're trying. In fact, I've spent several hours this week on the phone with legislators across the country in both parties who are very intent upon getting laws passed that are constitutional to simply mirror what other countries are doing.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson, and he's simply pointing out that children or young people process information differently than adults do, and it's been shown with PET scans and MRIs that especially when playing video games, why the midbrain lights up in adolescence, whereas, of course, as you get to be more mature, why you begin to differentiate information in the frontal lobes, and there certainly is a restraint on activity. So the whole idea is that these sort of visual reality, killing visual reality games, should not be sold And it's up, certainly, to the stores to do something about it. Of course, Mr. Thompson is working with legislators trying to get legislation passed in the states, because that's where it should be passed, not at the federal government, but at the state level, that says you've got to be at least 18 before you can buy these things. Of course, I don't think anybody should be buying them anyway. I don't think it's really fun to think about killing people and doing the terrible things they do on these video games, but we can't keep all people from their folly, but we have an obligation to protect the children. This young man who shot the three police officers, he's in death row, isn't he, today?
Yes, he's scheduled to die by lethal injection, and he affirms, as do his family members, that he played these cop-killing games for hundreds of hours. His negligent parents babysat him, in effect, in this fashion. I've sat in jail cells with young men who have killed their parents, and they don't know why. And one boy, Joshua Cook, in a Virginia state penitentiary, sentenced to 40 years. His parents would let him play Grand Theft Auto Vice City sometimes 12 hours a day in his room. The games are so addictive and designed to be that he would sit there with a bucket between his feet to urinate into, and he had food and beverage on either side of the monitor so he wouldn't have to leave the screen for 10 hours at a time. You know, the industry actually uses eye motion capture cameras to see during the testing and design phase to see what killing scenarios teens' eyes are most drawn to. And therefore, the games are designed to be physiologically addictive, which is why kids can play them for hours and hours on end.
And I think that people who produce these have to be held responsible. I think that certainly the stores that sell them have to be responsible. But then, of course, the parents, I think, should be responsible as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm a parent of a 13-year-old, and my obligation, obviously, is to keep him away from this stuff. And he's seen me on enough TV shows to know that Daddy doesn't approve of that stuff. But he helped me the other day. We went into a Best Buy on the eve of Christmas, and I hid behind the display, and he, at my request, picked up a copy of the game Warriors. This is an incredibly violent game, maybe the most violent one out there. It's based on the 1979 Paramount Pictures movie of the same name that spawned so much copycat violence that Paramount stopped showing it. And yet, the Grand Theft Auto video game company, Rockstar, decided to make a video game of this. He walked up to the cashier in a store, Best Buy, that says it will ID anyone who appears to be under 21 to make sure they don't sell these games to anyone under 17. But when he presented with the game, the cashier looked at him and said, "Do you have ID?" And he said, "No." He then winked at him and sold it to Johnny, no more questions asked. And so that's what we're seeing. You've got policies in place, but they aren't being enforced because the retailers want to say, "Well, we have a policy," and say they have a policy, but at the same time they want the $50 per game that puts money in their pockets and puts other kids at risk, because even if I keep my son away from these games, he's going to school and he's around kids whose parents are not that careful and are being negligent, and whose kids are, some of them, being sold without their parents' knowledge these games, and the kids are being filled up with unspeakable violence, and some of them are turning, in effect, being turned into Manchurian Candidate children who are ready, willing, and able to kill. So my son is in harm's way, through no fault of mine, except that he goes to school.
And I think that the significant thing is a whole society really is endangered by this sort of thing, because each one of us, of course, is a potential victim of these games, which are designed to teach killing is perfectly all right, to condition people to kill. That's how you condition our military, many of the techniques, and even some of the films were actually developed to teach people by our military to kill. And now they're being sold to our teenagers, and we wonder why there's violence out there. And of course, you say, "Well, if this is really true, why hasn't Rush Limbaugh told us this?" Well, you'll have to ask Russ that. Hey, we're just about out of time. Jack, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. How can people get copies of your book?
They can get it anywhere. It's at Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books a Million, and also Amazon.com and any of the internet sites, Christian bookstores, and so forth. I hope people read it because it's basically an encouragement to citizens that they can make a difference in their community.
And how about it? Website? Is there a website?
Sure, Amazon.com, BooksAMillion.com, Borders.com, anywhere.
What if you had a website? But if not, why, God bless, and please keep us abreast of what you're doing.
Thank you, Doctor.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan back
here at Radio Liberty,
and our guest this evening was Jack Thompson. Unfortunately, he's not going to be staying with us, so we're going to have open lines this the next half hour, and we will welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I really think that the subject of Mr. Thompson was dealing with is so important. Why would anybody create a game that would teach people how to kill? And certainly, when you're teaching them to kill, you certainly don't want to shoot them in the chest because they may very well have on a bulletproof vest. So you want to shoot them in the head. That way you're going to be sure to kill them. And that's how we're training our children. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a real problem in America today because this sort of thing goes on. It goes on all across America. They are really destroying the heart and mind and souls of our children. And when you could begin to understand that there is a conscious effort to corrupt our children, then so much of what's going on really makes sense. If you're looking for a logical explanation, oh, it's all for profit. No, some of it may be for profit, but there really are wicked and evil people out there. And they do have an agenda. They want to destroy America. And they're poisoning our children with fluoridated water. They're poisoning them with the mercury that is in the vaccines that not only will affect their minds, but it will also produce cancers, but it will also affect their fertility. It's a very, very effective means of suppressing fertility. And after all, if you believe in population control and you believe that people really are simply to be controlled by their masters, what's wrong with them doing this sort of thing? They're poisoning the minds of our children and creating this pathological obesity with the NutraSweet. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. And now, of course, with the genetically modified foods and the dramatic changes that come when some of these new genes have been inserted into the food that we're eating, and you have no idea what's really going on. Well, we've got Ray calling in from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Ray. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I just called because, I'm concerned about this stuff because I've been seeing this on TV, this video games thing, the violent video games. I've been seeing, when I turn on my TV set, which is very seldom now, but when I turn on my TV set, sometimes at late at night, I'll see violent videos flashing, commercials flashing before me, and I'm wondering who these people are. Are they in the entertainment industry or Hollywood?
Now, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly Mr. Thompson was only able to stay with us for half an hour. We had him for a full hour earlier in the day, but I'm sure he has to make a living and have a life for himself. He's married with children, with a son. Well, anyway, certainly we've been talking about the use of violent videos, and of course we have Ray calling from Santa Cruz, who's pointing out that he's very disturbed as he turns on television, and he sees so many violent scenes before him many times. Of course, he's sort of flashing things flashed onto the screen, and in very rapid sequences, they almost make you feel a little bit ill at ease. And so, first of all, let me put our telephone number out. We're going to have open lines the last half hour. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Ray pointing out that, he sits there, he sees these scenes, and many times violent scenes or strange things as flashing before his eyes. And what you don't understand, Ray, is they know how to actually impact on your mind. Mm. And these flashing scenes do have a profound impact on you. And everyone those scenes is indelibly recorded in your subconscious. Mm-hmm. And then they begin to sort of to disorient you with these flashing mm-hmm. scenes. They know what they're doing. I don't know if you... there's so many programs on now, Law and Order,
I know. I don't watch them, but I know that... I think they're licensed to do these things, but you see, the thing is, there's a connection between that and Hollywood and the entertainment industry, and I believe they're hooked up with the government, too. I really believe that it's so intensive, you know, the sort of thing, I don't know how we could remove it.
Well, I think you have to understand that it permeates every aspect of our lives. The next hour we're going to have on our good friend Carol Matriciana. She has a wonderful video. We actually carry it. It's called The Gods of Entertainment. Mm-hmm. And here she talks about Hollywood, what they're doing, how they're playing games with our minds, how they would attack, you know, Mel Gibson because he wanted to put on a beautiful film, Passion of the Christ. Then, of course, they would laud and, mm-hmm. And applaud something like the Brokeback Mountain, something like that. But, and how wonderful this is, the story of this wonderful, deep, touching love affair between the homosexual cowboys.
Have
to understand, and Carol brings this out beautifully in her her video, and she actually interviews this fellow from Hollywood who's a director and had worked very closely with Mel Gibson, mm-hmm. been in Hollywood for many years. He says the purpose of Hollywood is to destroy Christianity. And there are some good people there, but the people who control the reins of power there want to destroy our nation. And they, unfortunately, mm-hmm. they are doing a very, very good job of it. They dominate television. They dominate Hollywood. They dominate the media in this country. And there is what I refer to as the brotherhood of evil, or brotherhood of darkness.
Yeah.
Call it what you will.
Mm-hmm.
They know exactly what they're doing. Yeah. They want to destroy America because at one time we were a great Christian nation.
Yeah, I remember those days. Mm-hmm. But, I was going to say that Time magazine just now came out with on the cover of Time magazine, they talk about the Da Vinci Code movie, and Tom Hanks, of course, is the star of the movie, and the movie is blasphemous.
You're absolutely right, and that's the reason it's getting so much popularity. That's why it's been lauded by the motion picture, that's been lauded by the television, and of course that's why it got such wide circulation, because it is designed to undermine our belief in God.
Yeah, it is.
And it's really, I have you read the book? It's a fascinating book.
I haven't gotten into it.
I wouldn't waste your money. I hate to give them any money, but it is interesting how they create this whole idea. They want to discredit the Christian faith, and they attack this Christian sect within the Catholic faith. But I'm very, very concerned about it, too. But, of course, what they do is, of course, the real story here is that there is the Prior of Sion, which is a secret society that, of course, dates back to the time of Mary Magdalene. And actually, Mary Magdalene had been married to Jesus Christ. And it's a search for the Holy Grail. And the Holy Grail is not a cup or a chalice. The Holy Grail is Mary Magdalene's womb, where she carried the child of Jesus Christ. It had an illicit sexual affair with her.
Oh,
and, of course, ever since then, the royal houses of Europe, the kings, the monarchs, the emperors, have come from the lineage going back to David. And so, but that is a secret that they can't tell the American people or the people of the world. So the Prior of Zion is trying to get this information, and Opus Dei, of course, is trying to prevent the truth from coming out.
Right.
And Christianity is a fraud, and so they have this albino monk who is going around killing people right and left. And it's a very exciting story, and there's, of course, it mixes truth with falsehood in such a convincing manner that unless you know something about the history of the Bible, a history of Christianity, you're going to be taken in. And this is a totally blasphemous movie, totally blasphemous story, and that is why it is being popularized so much.
Well, I believe that Christ is the living God, and he's the judge, and...
I think that the people who are on the other side, Dan Brown, and the people in Hollywood who have been producing this and pushing it, and the major the television productions that have been lauding this,
mm-hmm.
someday they're going to have to stand before God's judgment.
They're going to have to stand before Christ's judgment. Yeah.
Right, they're going to have to stand before the great white throne of judgment, which
That's
is
right.
where the judgment of the damned.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
All right, anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I there was one other thing. I've been hearing that the Bush family, I don't want to, you know, downgrade the Bush family on the air or anything like that, but I heard that that Prescott Bush was hooked up with Planned Parenthood and eugenics.
No, I can't speak anything about the Planned Parenthood or eugenics, but I can tell you Prescott Bush was a United States senator. He was very close to Brown Brothers Harriman, which is a very powerful banking concern that is part of this whole Brotherhood of Darkness. Mm-hmm. Prescott Bush was a member of Skull and Bones. Prescott Bush stole Geronimo's skull, dug it up, and actually took it to the tomb, and it is today kept in the tomb at Yale University. Prescott Bush was indicted, as was his firm, for their association with the Nazi movement. And, of course, it's been downhill ever since then. Of course, the father, George Herbert Walker Bush, was a member of Skull and Bones. He was also chairman of the CIA. He had been part of this whole Brotherhood of Darkness for a long mm-hmm. period of time. He was a member of the CFR, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission.
And he was probably I.G. Farben, you know.
Well, of course, there was ties into this whole Nazi movement. Yeah. The Nazi movement still exists today. In fact, that's why the CIA helped the members of the Nazi and the SS Party, Nazi Party and the SS, mm-hmm. escape to South America. There were about 10,000 of them went down mm-hmm. there. And, of course, many of the worst and most violent and evil and depraved of the Nazis went down there, certainly.
My Uncle Don was in Dachau during World War II. He helped liberate Dachau and brought back pictures of Dachau. And I was always very much affected by the Holocaust. I think there's something... it's playing out something that's biblical. The Holocaust is, you know, I know is totally an evil thing, you know, but I think there's things in the Bible that sort of gives us an idea how that happened, you know.
Well, I believe, of course, that the Holocaust, as horrible as it were, yeah. was, I think God allowed it to happen because this was beginning to bring the children of Israel back to the Holy Land. Then
yeah,
many of them
right.
left Europe because they didn't feel at home there anymore, because they felt that the people of Europe certainly at any time might turn on them again. And so mm-hmm. this is where a lot of the original settlers came from, that went to the Holy Land and actually mm-hmm. then established the original Jewish state.
Yeah.
And I really believe, of course, that we're seeing now, for instance, almost all of the... all of the Ethiopian Jews have gone back to the Holy Land. There are hardly any in Ethiopia. A tremendous number of the Russian Jews have gone to Israel.
Wow.
This last year, there were 20,000 people from all over the world who immigrated to Israel, about several thousand Americans, many of them doctors and professionals, were willing to give up a very comfortable life in the United States to go to Israel because they feel that this is the time when they are to stand with their fellow Jews. I believe God has a plan for the Jews in the final days. I believe he has a plan for you and I in the final days.
I think
if we are part of his family.
We have to, you know, be vigilant, I guess, and we have to be aware of world affairs and especially what's happening over in Iran right now. And
Syria, I think it's only a matter of time before we invade, either invade or topple the governments of Iran and Syria. I hope we topple them because if we get into another military venture, I'm not sure God is going to help us.
No. You know, I think the most frightening thing is that President Bush has come out and said that, well, I can use torture whenever I want. It was in the paper today. He said that he could torture prisoners.
He's doing that because he wants to protect us.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay.
I share your concerns. We are living in terrible times.
Yeah.
You've got to keep your eyes fixed on our
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
And let's go to Jim calling from Santa Cruz, and then we'll get to Roger after that. Hi, Jim. How are you doing? You have a question or comment?
Just a brief comment, Stan. You guys were talking earlier about the Da Vinci Code.
Right.
And I think something about that book that a lot of people in the public lose sight of is that the book is classified as fiction.
No, but of course, Dan Brown says that this is all based upon fact. Now, the book is fiction, but he says that all of these things, and he leads people to believe that what he says about, of course, the origin of Christianity is factual, and that it's all built upon history, but of course, the story is fiction, but the background is factual, and it's not. It's a lie.
Right. Well, you know, there are many accredited academic scholars that have exposed a lot of his research as fallacy.
Yeah. You know?
And I'll give a basic example, because I have some insights into this stuff. You know, he claims that the ancient Gnostic writings conceal the truth about all this. And but when you read the Catholic Fathers, they said that the Gnostics, they condemned the Gnostics because they rejected Jesus' humanity.
Right.
They refused to acknowledge Jesus as a man. That's why they were condemned. And the Gnostic Gospels affirm that. The Gnostic writings from Nag Hammadi affirm that. They don't say specifically that Jesus had an affair with Mary Magdalene. You know? So, and, you know, academic scholars have pointed this out. These are people who know foreign languages, who can read the Coptic writings, you know, in their original language. And, you know, it's all out there for people to look at.
Right.
So, anyway, that's just the point I wanted to make.
All right, fine. Well, it's good to hear from you, Jim. Thanks very much. All right, well, let's go to Roger, who's calling from Allentown. Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. And by the way, Averell Harriman, of course, was tapped right alongside Prescott Sheldon Bush in the same year for Skull and Bones.
All right, and for our listeners who don't know, you are asked to join the Skull and Bones. They tap you on the shoulder, and they invite you to come to meet the other members. And, of course, it's quite an honor at Yale. They only take in 15 people a year. This is the top secret society in the United States. It is not simply another college fraternity. Once you go into this fraternity, you're in it for life. And nobody, to my knowledge, has ever revealed any of their secrets. Now, of course, there's a book written out, Secrets of the Tomb, by Alexandra Robbins, I think was her name. But be that as it may, she claims that some of the people there told her, all about Skull and Bones, and I think that they fed her a lot of disinformation. Yeah. They do not want the American people to understand that this is a secret occult society, that, the walls there are decorated with swastikas, having nothing to do with Adolf Hitler, because, of course, Adolf Hitler didn't come along until the 30s, and that was 100 years after their secret society was created. They were created in 1832. The Nazi movement was created in 1932. But, of course, they all had the same occult origin. But go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I called. See, there's the disturbing occurrence as of about half a year ago that all the Clear Channel stations throughout the land following the Howard Stern debacle and Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, now they all go to this six-second delay. And that means whereas before we used to have from 6 in the morning till 10 in the morning open lines in between those interminable commercials, now, he no longer takes calls except the very last hour. It's just too much trouble to set up for that six-second tape delay. And so I would hope you'd ask your guest, with Jack Thompson, if you have him back, if, say, maybe several times a year on conservative talk radio, some a crude person gets to squeak out an obscenity before the host cuts him off. Is that and should that be subject to fines and possible license revocation?
No, I don't think it is, and I think it's how you handle that. And you know, the most amazing thing is, Roger, we originally were set up to do the six-second delay or four-second delay. We decided not to do that, and, you know, I can't think that when the last time was that somebody's come up with something that was really obscene. And, of course, I've got a pretty fast finger, and I'll simply shut them off. So if anybody wants to try that, why, we'll shut them off as quickly as we can.
Yeah, well,
and as you see, it's not what the host does. Pardon me, it's not what the people are calling into. It is the pattern that Howard Stern and certain of these other hosts did of really trying to be obscene and trying to corrupt the morals and trying to shock people. That's why they call them shock jocks. So I don't think that you're going to get into trouble because somebody says something there, but I think you're going to get into trouble when you intend to do it and intentionally try to corrupt the morals of our society.
Well, to me, it's an excuse by Clear Channel Central to rein in their host. In other words, while before I think the show host used to like me calling in and pushing the envelope on truth, now he could get in trouble if he didn't push that button fast enough and there's a truth got out. You understand, that's easy to see, how that would work. In other words, he could have stopped that utterance from getting out over the air.
Okay, fine. Well, did you have another point you wanted to make?
No, that was it. I think it's a nasty development and a stinking rotten excuse, and God bless.
God bless. Thank you so much, Roger. Okay, fine. Well, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. This next hour, we're going to have Carol Matriciana with us, and we're going to be talking, well, you'll have to wait and see. You can't even think about changing that dial. Let me simply point out how concerned I am about what's going on over in Iraq today. The tempo of violence is increasing. And, of course, what had happened, the U.S. military had made all sorts of concessions to the Sunni leaders to just hold the violence down during the elections. It was so important we got the elections through. But you see, the elections, it's all a perception. Nothing has really changed. The first election, of course, was for the leaders of the country. And, of course, but nobody knew who the leaders that were going to be running. It was till 2 days before him. This wasn't a democratic election. We picked the people who were going to run. The people were given a choice of which of the leaders the Americans had picked. The second election was for had to do with the Constitution. The third one to confirm the Constitution. And ladies and gentlemen, now of course they're going to get new leaders in there. They're going to change the Constitution. They're not trying to solve the problem. If you wanted to solve the problem, you'd cut off the funding for the insurgents, you'd divide the country into three separate areas, but they have no intention of trying to solve the problem, because if they solved it, how could we justify staying there? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we simply want to get a little bit further into the background of the tragedy that's taking place in Iraq today. And we're told we have two choices. We have either victory or defeat. And those are the same choices we were given in Vietnam. We could either stay in Vietnam and continue fighting, or, of course, we could leave and, of course, under humiliating circumstances. And the problem is that those were not the right options. We could have won the war in Vietnam at any time. How do I know? Well, I personally talked to William H. Sullivan, who was the American ambassador initially to Laos, and he was there, and he was actually at Paris with Henry Kissinger. He knew what was going on. I personally interviewed General Louis Walt, who was the assistant commandant of the Marine Corps, and controlled and actually commanded the Marines in the I Corps area of Vietnam, I think 65, 66, or 66 and 67. Both of them told me we could have won the war in 2 months in Vietnam if we'd just been allowed to invade North Vietnam and attack the enemy, but we were never allowed to do that. We weren't allowed to bomb the hydroelectric plants there, plunge North Vietnam into darkness, shut off all the electricity, and their whole society would have collapsed. We could have bombed the dikes up there, flooded North Vietnam, and that would have been the end of the war. We could have bombed the harbor at Haiphong. We could have blockaded the mouth of the harbor. We could have bombed the train yards at Haiphong and cut off the supplies. We never intended to win the war. We financed the Russians. We were financing the North Vietnamese. During the Vietnam War, we built the largest truck plant anywhere in the world, and we built that in the Soviet Union. We financed the Fiat Motor plant in Russia during the Vietnam War, when Russia was providing the military supplies for killing our boys. We didn't try to win the war because it wasn't a real war. It was a diversion to keep us from seeing what was going on at home. Then what about Iraq today? Well, who's funding the insurgents? Who's providing money for the family of the insurgents? Why, of course, the Palestinians. One of the group, a Palestinian labor organization, and we're funding that. The Saudis, who were funding and supporting, the Pakistanis, who were funding, they're providing the terrorists, they're going down there, committing the atrocities. Why are we funding the people who are killing our boys? Because we don't want to solve the problem. It is not a matter of victory or defeat. It is simply, this is a gigantic diversion. And until the American people can understand, we're being constantly manipulated. We cannot understand either what's going on or what the solution to the problem is, because behind everything that is going on today are powerful spiritual forces drawing us towards World War III. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, well, let me suggest you get it, that you get the book, the video, or the audio tape, or get all three of them together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. If you have not yet seen our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, why, the three small pamphlets, and they're very inexpensive, you can get those, and they will give you real insight into what's going on behind the scenes today. And there really are spiritual organizations. There really is another dimension. There are people in touch with that other dimension. And we simply quote from the people who are in touch with the other dimension, with the Great White Brotherhood, with the Ancients of Wisdom, and, of course, with the Masters of Wisdom. And there are people who are gathering together in Henderson, Nevada, waiting for the return of the Master, Maitreya. And as incredible as it may seem, you'll learn so much about what the people on the other side are doing, the people who are in touch with the other dimension, if you go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down my newsletters on the occult hierarchy. There are two of them actually posted there for this year. I believe it's May and June. Or you can go to the Internet and Google in occult hierarchy, and you'll find our articles listed there. Or certainly, I would suggest our pamphlets, The Occult Hierarchy, and read those, understand what we're up against, and then help us educate others. Unfortunately, the churches, most of them don't even want to talk about this. They do not want to talk about the spiritual battle that's being played out on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our web page is radioliberty.com, where, of course, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, either at Radio Liberty or on GCN Live or on AmericanNewsNet.com. That's AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RBNLive.com, Radio Liberty. There's lots of ways you can listen to our Internet programs. And then, of course, you can listen to our shortwave, and these shortwave frequencies are listed on our Internet site. You can listen to our programs on Telstar 5, and if you'd like more information on that, give us a call. It's a satellite, digital satellite, and lots of fascinating programs up there, but you can listen to Radio Liberty 9 hours a day there. Of course, you're not going to get anything done if you listen 5 hours a day, but we try to educate you so that you can educate others. This is all we can do, because we're basically, this is God's battle, but we are to do our best. We are to sound the warning. And if we don't sound the warning, who will? And if not now, when? And we're told in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33 that we're to be the watchman. Are you a watchman on the wall? Are you letting people understand? You understand yourself. And if you don't understand yourself, you can't help others to understand and draw them closer to the Lord. Well, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. So until we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Carol Matriciana. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stan. Happy 2006. Can you believe it?
Well, I think
it's Y2K.
I think it's going to be an exciting, exciting time.
Yes, it's
and I really believe that we're seeing things heating up over there in the Middle East. I think we're going to see some dramatic financial changes in our country as the housing bubble implodes, as our certainly as our financial status begins to contract, as increasingly we're seeing unrest with the planned immigration to this country. There's just so many things that are going on. But
so
the things that really bother me most are the spiritual issues in America that are causing the progressive decline of our society. So what were we going to talk about tonight?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I'm in the film business. I communicate through movies and videos, and my last film was discussing the passion and the way that the entertainment industry, only five huge mega American corporations control 95% of the media. And I was so interested to see how Walt Disney was going to try and compete with Warner Brothers, Harry Potter, the seven series, the Harry Potter series, which is, of course, a compilation of seven books. How on earth Walt Disney, that has held family entertainment in a sense for so many years, especially family animated viewing, how they were going to come out with the Narnia film. And, of course, C.S. Lewis wrote the Narnia again in seven books, is the whole world of Narnia told in seven different stories. And so here we have the beginning, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that came out this Christmas to flood the cinema markets. It's actually held number four place, the fourth week, with over 33 million in the box office, still at number one, way ahead of King Kong. And what I found so interesting in the Narnia release was the way that Walt Disney cornered the Christian market and the secular market, trying to follow with the passion of Christ, where, of course, as we know, and I mentioned in my Gods of Entertainment movie, that Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ was blackballed, stonewalled from Hollywood. They would not open their theaters for distribution. And so he had to corner the church market for the very first time in the history of filmmaking. They went to the church, and Walt Disney tried to do the same with the Narnia series.
And did it work at all?
Well, here we see. It's at got the fourth week at right up there, and what I found so disturbing was how the church got behind this without even viewing the film, first of all, seeing what the world view was, seeing what the message was, and encouraging its church members to support the Walt Disney Narnia version.
Well, you know, I think it's really very interesting. I know a minister who went to see this, and he thought it was beautifully done from a Christian point of view. But as he said, if you were not a Christian, you wouldn't see a Christian message in it at all. In fact, you would interpret it entirely different, and I think that is the real danger. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Carol Matriciana, and she's expressing some concern about the way the church has embraced the movie, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. There's no question at all in Mel Gibson's film. This was about the Passion of the Christ. It was a beautifully done film, had a profound impact, and there was no question what the message was. Christ died for our sins, no question. But with the Narnia film, there is a question. Certainly there would be a lot of people who could see this film who would get no Christian message out of it at all if you don't have a Christian worldview. Would that be a fair statement at all? I'd like to get your take on this film and how they've really, I think you're absolutely right, they deceived the Christian community.
Well, they particularly focused in on the Christian community. They wanted the Christian dollar, and this was absolutely the strategic marketing, completely intentional marketing. Hollywood has been wooing Christian, or at least churchgoers, since its early days. And, of course, in the 20s, there were the biblical-themed films and very overt, based on biblical stories, the Ten Commandments, the King of Kings, Exodus, all those wonderful biblically themed epics, and with the Hollywood Church, when Mel Gibson's Passion came in, and they things definitely changed. But I think that Hollywood now sees that because the church-based audience was such a huge audience, they wanted to increase. The studios opened, in a sense, they opened themselves up to wanting that particular market. And so we see that they particularly went after that audience in the sort of Christian movie, supposedly, where they tapped in on the Christian audience. And they made it Christian to the Christians, but secular to the secularists. And that's what I think was such a very deceptive plan. They worked very closely with church-based organizations, with Rick Warner's Saddleback Church, Rick Warren, the author of the Purpose-Driven Life and series and Purpose-Driven Marriages, Purpose-Driven Church, Purpose-Driven Life. That author was focused in, the Saddleback Church was behind it. All pastors all across the nation were asked to endorse, to buy up the theater tickets for their church congregations to go and see this. And many, many pastors hadn't even seen it.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I guess it's Carol Matriciana. She's talking about the latest film, the Narnia film, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and how, of course, Hollywood is there to exploit the Christians and to take their money. And a lot of ministers, of course, had never even seen the film, but they were swept up in this enthusiasm, saying, this is a wonderful movie. And, of course, really, from the technical point of view, I think it's a great movie, at least is what I've heard from people who've seen it. It's superb filming. And, of course, if you are a Christian, you can sort of read into this a Christian message. The thing is that for a person who is not a Christian, you would not get any Christian message at all. So why are the Christians endorsing something that is designed to mislead? But pick the story up, Carol. I think people would like to hear your take on that.
Well, it's absolutely incredible. You're right. If one just looked at Walt Disney's bias and its agenda, you know very well that they would not be promoting something that was Christ-centered. We see that in the Passion of the Christ. None of the studios would come behind Mel Gibson because it was so truly, truly representative of the Gospels, and they did not want a gospel message to come out. Now, the interesting thing about Narnia is it can be all things to all people. It is not a gospel message. It is not an evangelical message. It is an allegory, and C.S. Lewis was very adamant himself in saying that this was not a Christian-based allegory it was not Christian-based theology for children. He clearly said that.
Now, of course, was this written before or after he was a Christian, do you know?
Oh, no, it was written after he was a Christian.
All right.
And it was, he did have a supposed Christian worldview, but of course, you know, we've got to look at C.S. Lewis. He was completely enamored with mythology and pagan concepts, and you know, he could, you can look at this film, you can look at these books, the Narnia books, and it has got a lot of paganism and in it, a lot of neo-paganism, and the basis that it comes from, it's remarkably sympathetic to a variety of pagan views, non-Platonic, medieval, Catholic. I mean, I remember when I was in the New Age, and certainly had fallen away from Catholicism, but came from a strong Catholic background, was into the New Age, and I read the C.S. Lewis, the Narnia books, as a pagan, as a New Ager, and I could completely identify with its worldview because it was so incredibly ambiguous. The idea that there were healing elements in nature, that the nature itself, that the rocks themselves could have godlike qualities in them and could be used for healing, and that this sort of nebulous concept of a god out there that didn't necessarily create but sort of did. I mean, it just fitted in with my worldview marvelously.
And I think that's really so important for people to understand that you, as a New Ager at the time that you were reading these, could identify this sort of pantheistic view, the pantheistic worldview that C.S. Lewis presents in this. And yet, of course, people who have never been into the New Age, have never been into the occult, who don't understand the danger of witchcraft, and don't understand the danger of promoting these ideas, would look upon this and say, oh, isn't it a beautiful Christian film? But I think that, of course, Disney's a lot smarter than the average Christian, and the people who run Disney know exactly what they're doing, and they laugh all the way to the bank, knowing full well, of course, they have simply introduced a few pagan ideas into the minds of the Christian public, who honestly believe it because it must be good, because all the Christian leaders are endorsing it. And I know many wonderful Christian people, many I'm sure that you know as well, that you know, really are enthusiastic about this, think it's wonderful, but nobody's ever sat back and explained to them what this is really about.
Well, you see, and I think another thing is that when we look at Warner Brothers, who absolutely went behind Harry Potter, and of course hundreds of thousands of Christians have got pulled into Harry Potter reading that, and as you know, I made the film Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, and there were Christians that came back to me and said, well, their children are reading it, and pastors are endorsing it, and indeed there are Christian books out at the moment that are saying, helping pastors to find God through Harry Potter. Now, here we have an actual witch, young Harry Potter, who goes to his make-believe world, sort of based half in fantasy, half in reality, and he goes to another world, and he is taught how to practice good white magic. And very, very similar comparisons are in Narnia, where there is a sort of real world. We have the witch Jardis, who came out of London at one point, so we have the reality of the real world, just like Harry Potter's real world, but enmeshed in fantasy. And fantasy allows you to explain and grasp and integrate into your life things that are not logical, you know. And so here we have a sort of whole fantasy supernatural realm, and we have these three, four young children, humans in the Narnia series, that go into another world, a make-believe world, a supernatural world, through a wardrobe. And the wardrobe, of course, is made of the wood that comes from an apple tree that Aslan allowed to be planted. It has magical healing abilities, and it takes these children into this world where we have the same type of creatures in Narnia that are in Harry Potter's world. We've got centaurs and unicorns and fauns and mythological creatures that C.S. Lewis was absolutely fascinated with this. And I think the very, very frightening thing, or rather scary thing, or something that we need to be very discerning about, is that C.S. Lewis has a remarkable ability to bring Christian readers into new worlds and make them feel at home in the midst of pagan rituals. occult mysteries and magical forces. And that is the most confusing thing, I think, about Narnia, because never have our children been surrounded by so many spiritual counterfeits and seductions and digital delights and occult images. And I think Christian parents, really the Christian community, has never been less prepared to resist this sort of spiritual temptations, if you will. And here we've got this master at having this ability to bring Christian readers into this pagan world that he absolutely loved. I mean, he came from it. He admits he had a fascination with spiritual things. In his one of his books, he explains that he actually had a sort of spiritual lust, if you will, where he says that not everyone has this disease. I mean, he actually calls it that, where he says, but those who will have it know what I mean. It's a spiritual lust. It's like the lust of the body. It has the fatal power of making everything else in the world seem uninteresting while it lasts. And it is probably this passion more than any other desire for power which makes magicians. Now, those are his words. And he was very drawn into a vividness of the imagination. And in fact, he, in his early life, went to Stonehenge. And there is a particular stone in Stonehenge which is a sacrificial stone. And we see in his Narnia, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, at the end, Aslan, the lion, this sort of figure, this the power of the jungle figure, which many Christians think is also the allegory or the Christ figure, if you will. Aslan willingly sacrifices himself on this stone table, which it looks exactly as though it's in Stonehenge. And you ask any pagan, all pagans will tell you that a blood ritual is demanded in the sort of deeper magic, that you have to give up human sacrifice, or blood rather. And in Stonehenge, it was often understood that this sacrificial stone was where human sacrifices were offered during the winter solstice. And of course, that's also done in India with blood sacrifices, and the Mayans did it. I mean, many of the great cultures have this sacrificial blood sacrifice. So here we have Aslan, this sort of Christ-like figure, this lion that is slaughtered on a sacrificial stone, not the crucifix, mind you, not the way that Jesus was put on a cross, but it's done in this way which could be all things to any pagan.
Now, I'm just interested that when you were a Christian, the New Age and the pagan religions, and you read this, I remember many years ago, going into a metaphysical bookstore, and for those of you who don't know, metaphysical bookstore, we might call it a New Age bookstore, but it's where you'll get all the occult books, you'll get books on Satanism and witchcraft, you'll get the writings of Alice Bailey and Annie Besant and Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, you'll get books written by many of the leading Masonic authors. You'll get Stephen Rockefeller's book, Science and Nature. All of these books, of course, which are part and parcel of the overview of the pagan, the New Age, these people who were trying to contact the other dimension. But I'll never forget going in there, and this must have been 20 years ago, and seeing the books by C.S. Lewis there, the Narnia series. And at the time I thought, why are those books here in the pagan bookstore? How did it happen that you were reading these when you were into the pagan culture?
Oh, because it was something that we did. I mean, it was fantasy literature. Of course, in those days, Harry Potter wasn't around and all that kind of thing. But it was fantasy literature, and it was something very readable and fun. And it perfectly matched our worldview. I mean, it had pagan rituals in it. It had concepts of using good magic, white magic. And, of course, in the Narnia series, you have the White Witch there that... You know, that's not a Christian worldview. We don't believe in a white witch and white magic.
In fact, of course, when Saul actually went to the Witch of Endor, that ended him. I mean, you're not supposed to have anything to do with witchcraft, and when he did, of course, he sealed his own doom.
And also, he calls a witch a witch. You know, right. It's not white or black.
We'll be back here in just a moment here with Carol Matriciana here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I'll have to admit, I have not yet seen the movie, but I've talked to people who have, and some are just, of course, just so full of praise, and people I like, and they just say this is the greatest Christian film of all time. Every Christian has to see it. But we have a friend, Pastor Joe Schimmel, who actually, like Carol, was into the occult. He was actually a channeler, channeling demonic messages into his rock music. He was writing all sorts of things. And when he began to realize that he was actually becoming demonically possessed, he came out of that, and he has a wonderful ministry. He's put together some videos called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, something we put out a great many of. But my wife, Barbara, asked him what he thought, and after seeing it, he said, you know, Christians would see a Christian message. Certainly not see a Christian message at all. And, of course, I think that you, Carol, having been deeply involved with the occult, would definitely see the occult message that was there. So Disney has really outsmarted the Christians, haven't they?
Well, this is the point. You see, I don't think it's that Christians don't, I mean, one can go in and see whatever message. I think what we have got to understand is that C.S. Lewis always insisted that his seven Narnia books were not a point-by-point Christian allegory. So what we've got to do in this time and age when there is so much postmodernism in the church, there is so much confusion, there is so much fudging of Christianity, we've got seeker-friendly churches, we've got, you know, the emerging church, the positive-driven churches, and what we've lost is our biblical discernment. And this film comes in at a time where it is extremely seductive. I asked some Christians that went to the Bible college, they're really wonderful students of the Word, and I said, what did you think? They said, oh, it was wonderful, Narnia was just wonderful. And I said, could you explain to me what was wonderful? Now, of course, I go along with all the digital magic, and I mean the digital imagery and all of that. The production was super. The making of the film, I'm not criticizing at all. It was a film of a fantasy world. But when you look at the, if you just take it as a fantasy film, a film where it was a place inhabited by beasts and dwarfs and fauns and centaurs and giants and witches, very, very similar to Harry Potter's world, that's fine. But when you start calling Narnia, this fantasy world, a Christian film, and then say, well, Aslan, the great lion, is a Christ-like figure, I said, well, let's go to the theology of this. I mean, let's compare some of the attributes of Aslan, the salvation of Aslan, his sacrifice. For instance, in his army, Aslan had all these half creatures, these beasts, these dwarfs, these fauns, the unicorn, were all part of Aslan's army. Now, at a time and age when we've got children today that are having nightmares and getting somehow pulled into the occult and having these nightmares, for them to think that these weird mixed creatures come from Aslan is a very dangerous place for young Christians who aren't discerning.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Carol. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're told that in the latter days, why, even the elect will be deceived, and I really believe that there is a spiritual blindness that is infecting so many Christians today. They cannot understand the nature of the world we live in, because they don't understand there are powerful spiritual forces intent upon deceiving them. And I think that there is a spiritual blindness that seems to have gripped even many of our Christian ministers. And as somebody once said, they're so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, and they're not leading the people in the right direction, and they're not pointing out how we are constantly being manipulated. And we are ending up with a church like the Church of Laodicea that's neither hot nor cold. In fact, it really doesn't make much difference at all because it is not influencing the society in which we live. So, well, that is the background. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, you see, you're absolutely right. When we have an entertainment coming out, and it is not for the entertainment industry to teach us our theology. So I'm not even saying that it's Walt Disney or Warner Brothers or any of these industry standard people to teach us. It's for Christians. It's for churches to teach us and disciple us in the Word of God. So it isn't even the job of entertainment. So to even say that this is a film that has Christian values, no, it can be seen through a Christian worldview. There are certain concepts. I mean, yes, evil reigns. Good reigns over evil. But that's the same message in Harry Potter. And Aslan in the story of Narnia was involved in deep magic. And in a world today where we've got children, we've got Wicca as the fastest growing religion, witchcraft is the fastest growing religion amongst teenagers, and they hear that Aslan's involved in deep magic, Aslan being the lion, the Christ figure. He's involved in deep magic and talks about deep magic, and that he is sacrificed, but he is sacrificed on the witch's terms. There's such subtle differences. And we can't go forward and even, you can't even use this as an evangelistic tool. As I mentioned, these Bible students, when they realized that those that were in Aslan's world and supported Aslan were all these strange mixed creatures, and that Aslan being slaughtered on a pagan ritual stone is not the same as the crucifixion where Christ voluntarily gave of himself. I mean, this wasn't because a witch's deep magic dictated it. It was because the God of the universe decided it, you know. So there are all sorts of subtle differences. And there's just such confusion with the similarities of Harry Potter, the similarities of white magic being okay, dark magic being worse. And then, of course, you've got the Christians endorsing it, and for instance, we've now got Walt Disney is working with Robert Schuller of the Crystal Cathedral and Rick Warren of Saddleback Church, and they're working on, if you can believe it, Disney is reaching out to 40,000 youth ministries and putting together curriculum to help promote Narnia using the church market. I mean, this is incredible. And think of the type of people, the Robert Schulers and the Joe Olsons of churches that are, you know, seeker-friendly churches, that where you get these people that will not talk about the uniqueness of Jesus Christ and the uniqueness of his sacrifice, because we are such sinners, because one can't talk about that today because it's disintegrating our self-esteem, supposedly. So let's realistically look at the people that are being chosen by Disney to be involved in promoting Narnia are the politically correct. They're the ones that would not speak openly about Jesus because he's an offensive stumbling block.
Yeah, I think it's really so interesting that it was certainly within this last year when Time magazine picked the Christian leaders of our country, and then the leader of the Christian leaders, and whose picture was on the front page of Time magazine, which hates Jesus Christ and everything he stands for? Why, the man was Rick Warren. Why would Time magazine pick Rick Warren as the leader of the Christian movement today, unless perhaps they would like him to be the leader of the Christian music, that like to Christian movement, that like to convince Christians that here is a man we can rally behind. Look, he's successful. He's brought all sorts of management techniques into the Christian faith. He makes our churches run more efficiently. They make a lot more money. And look at the wonderful success they have. I mean, they have mega churches with 10, 20, 30, 40,000 people. Isn't that what it's all about? Success? We'll be back in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. We're talking about the movie that's really number one at the box office at the present time, even, of course, dwarfing King Kong. And of course, what is really so distressing is that Hollywood is reaching out to the Christians, but not because it wants to, help Christianity. It wants to destroy Christianity. That's the purpose behind it. If you haven't seen Carol's wonderful video, we actually carry it. It's called The Gods of the New Age, and actually here you'll actually see one of the... That's Gods of Entertainment, I'm sorry. The Gods of Entertainment, one of the Hollywood producers saying the purpose of Hollywood is to destroy Christianity. So why would you join together with these people thinking that they're going to help us? Are the church leaders totally blinded to the agenda of Hollywood and Disney?
It is amazing. USA Today asked in one of its articles, is the world created by C.S. Lewis a rip-roaring piece of fantasy or a fairy tale suffused with Christian imagery? And I think the amazing thing in this day and age is that the answer is both. And this is what is... so incredible that Walt Disney is succeeding. This has become a number four for the fourth week running, the number one bestseller, because they're selling the movie on two tracks. It's a sort of cross between The Lord of the Rings and The Passion of the Christ, and they're selling it through the Christian market that was found to be so incredibly hungry for family-based and Christian content with The Passion. And when Hollywood threw out The Passion and would not support it in their through their theaters, the Christian churches raised up and made this film into a number one blockbuster bestseller. And this is the market that now we see Walt Disney coming after with the seven-part Narnia series, just the way that Warner Brothers went after with the Harry Potter. Now, of course, they didn't focus in on the church market, but they did so well. But this is the first sort of crossover. And what's incredible is that they used the churches, they used pastors to talk about this film before many of them had even seen the film, and got their churches to go to the theater. And then there's a whole different track where they're selling to the non-religious. And I've spoken to people that don't come from a religious background, and they said that they didn't in the least see this as a religious film, that there was nothing religious in it. And yet we talk to Christians who say, yes, this is incredibly religious. It's Christ as a Christ figure.
Hold that. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. And before we go on, certainly we do carry many of Carol's videos through Radio Liberty, videos such as the Gods of Entertainment and Harry Potter repackaged. And if you go to our website at radioliberty.com, well, you can see the list of them. But, Carol, why don't you get your website out so people can know how to get in touch with your information as well?
Well, thank you. It's my first name, which is spelled C-A-R-Y-L. So it's www.caryltv, short for television, .com. And it's very simple, and I've got articles there about... I'm just about to post an article on Narnia, but I've got them on Harry Potter and Christmas, and because we were carrying the unwrapping of Christmas... during the Christmas month. But anyway, there is, as you mentioned, the Harry Potter witchcraft repackaged and Gods of Entertainment, and then the New Barbarians, which is training children to kill and teaches about Islam and the whole complexity of Islam and terrorism in this day and age. And then one of my favorites, which is Supernatural Powers, and that was really in response to the flooding of the confusion over angels and who are angels and what are fallen angels and do we have guardian angels and what's the history behind them. And really that fits in so well with the Narnia series at the moment, this whole world out there of make-believe creatures that have come in through the Harry Potter movies, and now we see are in the world of Narnia, these mixed creatures that are friendly creatures, talking beasts that talk to the four humans, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, that are our four human heroes in the Narnia, in the world of Narnia, that get pulled into, taken from the human world into this sort of strange place inhabited by beasts and dwarfs and centaurs and giants that all can talk. And these talking animals, some of them are good, some of them are bad, some of them belong to the White Witch, some of them belong to Aslan, the greatest of the talking animals, who offers himself as a sacrifice, well, is put across in a sort of pagan ritual, in a deep magic, as it's called, a deep magic to conquer death. And I remember in India going to the Kali temple, where there are animal sacrifices, blood sacrifices offered every day for the sins of hundreds of Indians that come and have their animals killed at the pagan stone of Kali. And of course that is such a different killing than Jesus Christ, who offered himself as a sacrifice on the cross and fulfilling incredible prophecies, and rose again, and but here we have an animal raising again, and it's just such a confusion. And as I mentioned earlier, I think what's more frightening than anything is that never before in the history of the world have our children been surrounded by so many spiritual counterfeits and suggestions, and the use of the imagination and supernatural and occult imagery. And the Christian community just isn't prepared to deal with all this. And even if you look in the schooling system, for years the Narnia books have been offered in the schooling system. So why would the Narnia books be read in schools where you don't have the Left Behind series read there, because they're so strongly based on biblical values? But Narnia, which is not based on biblical values but is on a fantasy world, can be read aloud in the classroom or as part of the curriculum. It's because it can be all things to all people.
And, of course, I've been asked by people, well, certainly what's wrong with Narnia? After all, it's getting wide coverage. And I said, look, what did the media do? What did the organized Hollywood crowd, the anti-Christian Hollywood crowd, do to The Passion of the Christ? Well, of course, everybody knows that they banned it. They wouldn't allow it to be shown in their theaters. They would not help to finance it, or produce it, or distribute it. But they see nothing wrong with Narnia. Now, why would it be that they would hate one, despise one, do everything they could to destroy Mel Gibson, to call him anti-Semite, to attack him viciously, and yet they laud and applaud Narnia? Why would it be that the people who hate Christianity would be so much in favor of Narnia? And, of course, then you begin to see the light go on, and they begin to understand that once again we've been taken in. Now, Carol, one of the things that really bothers me is, why aren't our ministers, so many of them, discerning enough to see what this is about? Do you think they really understand the spiritual battle that's going on today over the souls of men, the survival of Christian civilization? Have they been so dumbed down in the seminaries that they really don't understand the spiritual battle that's taking place?
I think, in this world where we're told we can't make judgments, we can't, it's not politically correct to talk about Christ, we can't talk about sin, we can't talk about anything offensive, I think they're just so thrilled that there is something that kind of vaguely comes in with some kind of an excuse of portraying Christianity, that they've completely lost discernment. They just don't see the bigger picture. They don't comprehend, it's incredible. I mean, we have totally been captivated by all this mythical nonsense and entertainment and our Christian pastors are part of it. But you know, Dr. Stan, I think if it's put into a biblical context, we are told that in the last days there's going to be an apostasy. We're warned that there's going to be a falling away of the church. We're warned not to submit to give ourselves up to tickling ideologies and doctrines of demons and mythological genealogy, you know, and yet here we're in the midst of it, and it's almost that Christians have become so deluded. And I have read amazingly so many Christians antagonistic towards, if people were listening to you and me today, some of these Christian people that I've read about, some of these pastors, they are so angry at voices like yours and mine that are standing up saying, let's have discernment. Think about what's being done. They are critical of us because they're not testing the spirits. They're not going back to the Word of God and looking at the Word of God. They're thinking, well, C.S. Lewis is a good Christian man. Well, C.S. Lewis, yes, he may have had some kind of Christian dialogue with Tolkien, and he may have certainly, you know, had some, I mean, I can't judge his heart at all, but you just look at his writings and see that he clearly said that he absolutely insisted. It wasn't a question of him even pretending. He did not consider the Narnia books to be point-by-point Christian allegory. He said that. And you just have to compare it against the Bible to see that he has completely mixed mythology and his love of mythology in these books. And, you know, he's been very heavily influenced by, I mean, he was a professor that loved Milton and Spencer, and, you know, he was just he did get pulled into some sort of Christian apologetics when the BBC took his books onto the BBC and lifted his books up, and he sort of became an apologist. But really, when you compare some of his thoughts against the Bible, his view of salvation, his view of eternal life, and see that, you know, he didn't subscribe to biblical inerrancy or penal substitution. He believed in purgatory and baptismal regeneration. He had a very checkered pedigree and some sort of theological points of view, and I can see that today his writing, and he has this sort of tremendous interest in these thin places where the physical world and the spiritual world met, and you know, that's what he wrote about. But he didn't even pretend that he was writing these based on a Christian, in a sense, biblical concept. But he did sort of have his somewhat colored Christian worldview in it, but, you know, it's really, it doesn't take too much discernment to see this was a fantasy world, fantasy writing, and even when you look at the creation of Narnia and the humans and what Aslan did, I mean, just from a biblical point of view, Narnia doesn't even represent anything in the Bible.
And that you go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3, and it says that before the man of sin will be exposed, there will be a great falling away. There will be a great falling away before a man of sin, of course, who is the Antichrist, be revealed. Well, are we seeing a great falling away from the Scriptures today?
Absolutely. Yes, we are. And when you look at the end of this Narnia, where salvation didn't even come from Narnia dying, let's assume that this great big Aslan was meant to be Jesus Christ. Salvation didn't come through his sacrifice. Salvation didn't even, in the movie, that wasn't what saved these human beings. Their fighting in a battle is what saved them. It was human, you know, in the Narnia concept, there was a prophecy that said that these four human beings would defeat Narnia, and that this cold, this ice and snow that had been there for 100 years would eventually be melted. And so here we get these four human beings that were made kings and queens of Narnia, after they fought a battle, but it was done in their own energy, nothing to do with the sacrifice of this pagan sort of strange ritual with this lion. So for 15 years, the kids were made kings and queens of Narnia, but it was based on you know what they were able to do. And
well, of course, I think we look and see what's going on today, and we see the things that are happening all around us, and we have to realize that there's a spiritual battle going on, and we're not going to win this battle by our own efforts. We're called to be involved, but it will not be our efforts that's going to change us. We're to do our best, but the battle is the Lord's, and this is the message that is not getting out.
Exactly. And, you know, even C.S. Lewis, he admitted, I mean, he was an avowed atheist at 14 years of age. He was very frustrated by those who undermined paganism or pagan myths. And towards the end, he actually said in one of his books that the story of Christ is simply a true myth, a myth working on us in the same way as other myths. Now, come on. How can we say that the story of Christ is simply a true myth? You know, it is not. It's not. It was he had certain twists and certain suggestions and certain concepts and meanings. But I don't want to. I'm certainly not saying where I'm not a judge of C.S. Lewis's faith, but I do know that the people trying to make this into a Christian story, especially at this day and age, when we should be trying to make disciples of our Christians, help people to become stronger disciples, help them to get into the Word of God, to be able to test the Spirit, to be able to challenge what is happening, to go to the Bible, to see that in the end times we're being taken over by a spirit of deception and that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but powers and principalities that are out to take away the glorious power of the Lord Jesus Christ. And here we are, we're getting more and more diluted and polluted, and our Christianity is becoming softer and wimpier. And you know, that's a politically correct place to be.
All right, well, of course, somebody called, some Jay from Colville, Washington, contrasted Christ's sacrifice on behalf of God to Aslan's sacrifice to appease the white witch to save the bad boy, Edmund. I haven't seen the movie. Would that be a fair estimate of what happened?
What did he say, Dr. Stan?
Contrasting Christ's sacrifice for our salvation to Aslan's sacrifice to appease the white witch to save someone.
Yes. Now let's listen to this. Appease the white witch.
That's of course. But this is what that he says that the movie showed.
And it's exactly what it is.
In other words, the sacrifice was to appease evil.
Yes, that's exactly that the white witch comes forward and says that there is this old dark magic that says that you have to give a sacrifice for a sacrifice. Well, let's go to the Old Testament. Of course we have to give blood sacrifice for blood sacrifice, but ultimately Christ died for the sin of the world, and Christ is the winner. Aslan gives himself as a sacrifice, but he's not the winner. The four human beings come forward, and they fight the battle in their own power. And Aslan giving himself as a sacrifice was nothing to do with their salvation.
Well, I think that, of course, this is the Bible according to Disney. And, of course, I think that every one of our listeners has to understand that Hollywood hates Christianity. Hollywood does everything they can to understand Christianity. So why should we think on this one instance that made such a terrible mistake to make this great Christian film?
Also, Christians are trying so hard to justify Narnia being a Christian film. But let's see, earlier I mentioned that there were friends of mine that are not religious who did not see any religious content in Narnia. That was not a film of salvation, the way that Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ showed Christ died for our sins. I mean, that was a truly evangelistic tool based on the Bible, showing the work of Jesus Christ, there could be no argument, and the entertainment industry would not allow that film to go to the theaters. So here we have a film that, yes, you've got kind of Christ figures, just like Harry Potter's meant to be a Christ figure as well.
Okay, well, let's go to Kevin calling from Austin. Hi, Kevin, how are you? Do you have a question or comment?
Fine. Hi, Dr. Stan. Hi, Carol.
Hello, Kevin.
Yeah, I've been listening to you. You're very interesting.
Go ahead. I have a question. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to comment the thing that I didn't like about the movie.
All right. What did you like? Go ahead.
Well, they changed the girl's character, Susan. They turned her into a real bad, you know, irritable person. I want to say bitch, but I don't want to say that on your radio show. You know, they changed her character from something to like a modern, like a modern American rather than, a little English girl from 1940. And I noticed that, and that offended me. And some of the violence, the kids, even the way the kids threw snowballs at each other, I thought was not according to the original intent.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Kevin.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, do you have any comment at all?
Dr. Stan, Kevin is extremely insightful. You see, what we've been doing is we've been talking about the theological side of the film and the dangers on mixing things. But I think Kevin's got a very, very good point. C.S. Lewis's book was much stronger. The characters were stronger. It had a much stronger Christian worldview. The Beavers, if Kevin probably would remember that, the Beavers gave such a huge character build-up for Aslan. Now, in the movie, everything was minimized. The children seemed to be a little wimpy. Peter wasn't as courageous as he was in the film. Susan wasn't as strong as he was in the book. Susan wasn't as strong. You're absolutely right. Now, Edmund, remember when he did the wickedest things with it, when he kind of became seduced by the witch, he was so repentant in the C.S. Lewis books. I mean, there was a real sense of remorse with his brothers and sisters, and also with Aslan. That was completely missed out. So, you know, they weren't even true to the characters and the storyline of the book. And I think, Kevin, that's a very good point taken.
All right, let's go. We're running out of time. Let's go to Roger calling from Allentown. He's been patient. Hi, Roger. You have a question.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to thank you both for this very superb sharpening of my own views here. And I just, I think even still, C.S. Lewis's, particularly the non-fiction books, are still pretty much must-reads with a bucket full of warnings thrown in, some of which you've excellently covered. And, but the ease with which these Christians are glomming on to this Narnia thing, does it remind you of Khrushchev's statement that of a stupid Westerners, that is, with respect to Disney, where Khrushchev says, "We spit in their eyes, and they think it is due."
Well, I think we need a little more discernment. Thank you so much, Roger.
God bless.
All right, fine, and I think that really we have a real problem. I think that Roger's absolutely right. There's a lack of spiritual discernment, and this is why we do what we do, and we bring you people like certainly Barrett Schoes and Carol Matriciana. And Carol, we're out of time. The hour flies by so fast when we have you. We've got to get you on our other programs to bring up this whole discussion.
Dr. Stan, I'm just so grateful to what you and Barbara do, and well done, and may God bless you mightily in 2006, and thank you for your wonderful listeners who support you, and it's just been such a fun show. Thank you.
Good night. God bless you, and we'll look forward to having you with us again real soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed this, and I think we need to be more discerning. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there listening to us from across America, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters. If you'd like to understand why the price of oil and electricity and natural gas and diesel and gasoline, all these things are going up, give us call, ask for our newsletter, Peak Oil 2. If you'd like to understand what's really going on in certainly over in Iraq, that would be Days of Iraq. We're told we have two choices. We can either, of course, stay continue the battle, in which there will continue being casualties. We can pull out and there'll be chaos, there'll be casualties. Which choice do you want? And, of course, the truth of the matter is we don't want either choice because both are bad choices. And they say, well, you have to make a choice. No, you don't. You have to understand how we got there and that you're being lied to at every turn. And you certainly would want to get our Deja Vu Iraq. And then, of course, if you're hearing this replayed a couple of weeks from now on the Here's Help Radio Network, where we'll have our new film, pardon me, our new newsletter out. And, of course, this goes into what's going on in Iraq as well. And it's called The Wrong War. The Wrong War. Well, you have to understand what this is about. And if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in getting any of the things that Carol Matriciana was talking about, her videos, The Gods of Entertainment, Harry Potter Repackaged, give us a call and we can give you more information about those. 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our internet programs there, 5 hours a day on 4 different networks. That's AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RadioLiberty.com, RBNLive.com. That's AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RadioLiberty.com, and RBNLive.com. And then, of course, we hope that you'll certainly tell others about our programs, encourage them to listen. If you're listening on the Here's Help Radio Network, remember we do have a program on your station every Saturday at 12:30, and your job is to encourage others to listen to our program so that they can begin to get educated and understand the true nature of the battle in which we're engaged. And get your Bible out. Look up Thessalonians, the 2nd Thessalonians, 2nd chapter, 3rd verse, and it talks about how there'll be a great falling away. There'll be a falling away before the man of sin is revealed. Who is the man of sin? Well, that's a theological discussion for another time, but I believe that is the Antichrist. Who is coming? The occultists believe he's coming. They're going to Henderson, Nevada. They're accumulating there. It's almost like the movie The Strange Encounters of the Third Time. They're being drawn there because they know the time is drawing short. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And if you don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, you need to learn more. Read the book of John. And if you'd like to talk to me off the air, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.